All right, 1 Timothy 3:8. We're obviously still measuring a godly man by looking at some of the spiritual characteristics required of leaders in the church. If you were here last week, you know that we moved from elders to deacons in terms of 1 Timothy 3. But the point is that every Christian man, regardless of his role and calling, ought to aspire to these characteristics. And so in verse 8, it says, likewise, deacons must be reverent. And now our word this week, not double-tongued. I don't know why, but I always think of a scene from an old movie, a Western, where the Indian says, white man, speak with forked tongue. That's like the most famous thing. The Greek word dialogos, it appears only here in the New Testament. That always makes it rough because it's not impossible, but you can't compare contexts. But it's only here. Some, therefore, think it refers to gossip. It's as if you had two tongues going at the same time. One that you use when talking to a person, and another that you use behind their back when you're talking about a person. There's a famous illustration about gossip. I thought everybody had heard it, but my wife heard it for the first time. And I said, well, when we were in Calvary San Bernardino, John used to use this every week. But seemed like it. And she said, no, I missed it. So anyway, so let me read it to you. Here's a version I'll read to you. 19th century folktale about a man who went about town slandering the town's wise man. One day he went to the wise man's home and asked for forgiveness. The wise man, realizing that this man had not internalized the gravity of his transgression, told him that he would forgive him on one condition: that he go home, take a feather pillow from his house, cut it up, and scatter the feathers to the wind. After he had done so, he should then return to the wise man's house. Though puzzled by this strange request, the man was happy to be let off with so easy a penance. He quickly cut up the pillow, scattered the feathers, and returned to the house. Am I now forgiven? He asked. Just one more thing, the wise man said. Go now and gather up all the feathers. But that's impossible. The wind has already scattered them. Precisely, he answered. And though you may truly wish to correct the evil you have done, it is as impossible to repair the damage done by your words as it is to recover the feathers. Your words are out there in the marketplace, spreading hate even as we speak. So you've heard that from me now, so I'm clean on that. There's only a handful of really famous illustrations that pastors use over and over again. But anyway, gossip is not just something women can be guilty of. So get that out of your mind as well. We tend to think of it that way, but guys are or can be just as bad or worse. We also tend to minimize gossip. Sure, it's a sin, but I don't think we consider it a very bad one. So listen to this from Romans chapter 1, verses 28 through 32. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things deserve death, not only do them, but also approve of those who practice them. Back up there in verse 29, whisperers translates to gossip. And so gossip, backbiting, it's in pretty bad company, you know, when you read a list of sins like that. Dialogos might instead, or we would say also, be a prohibition about saying one thing to one person, but something else to another person. This doesn't mean that you tell everyone everything about every situation. It doesn't cancel out a need for discretion. There are some things that other people don't need to know, and we use that expression on a need-to-know basis. I remember our former chaplain, my senior chaplain, but he did that to me one time very seriously. I just came in and asked some question, and he goes, well, Gene, that's on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know. I thought, wow, where did that come from? You know, I mean, it was like, I felt like I was being disciplined or something. You know, I said, well, all right. So I never asked him anything again. But anyway, so You don't tell everybody everything. There's still discretion. But the idea is that whatever you would say to one person, if you're going to say it to someone else, it should be the same. You don't have two different stories going. I run into this all the time in a kind of a different way. Typically, the typical situation for me is that a wife will call to ask counsel or advice on a situation with her husband. Not long after we hang up, the husband will call and ask, "Did you tell my wife such and such?" Because it's just incredulous, you know. They're like, they can't believe. And half the time, no, I didn't tell her that, you know. But and sometimes yes, but a lot of times they embellish what I said, which is why it's usually best to talk to everybody at the same time. Even then, people hear what they want to hear. But it happens all the time. It happens all the time. People say, "Well, you told my wife this." I go, "I don't think so." You know, that was another Gene Pensiero. But it gives me plausible deniability. Gene Pensiero tell me, "Yep, maybe." Sometimes I will hear from someone that someone else said I told them something. And that's usually something that puts me in a bad light, you know. So, my personal theory right now. I try not to. I think I'm pretty good at this. I don't post anything. We talked about. I don't post anything on Facebook or Twitter or even emails that I wouldn't want everybody in the world to read. And so, I remember a couple of years ago, this one gal who was really, really upset with me about something. It was trivial, but she was really, I mean, she wrote me it seemed like a 20-page email, you know, with all of this terrible accusatory stuff in it, and how could you, and I'm gonna, and this and this, and so I wrote her back, and I said, "Sounds like you're upset. Let's get together and talk." I mean, you know, that's all I had to say about it, because you can't really, you know, get involved with that, and so, you have to be very careful about that kind of stuff, and so a lot of it's, but you can't do anything about what you say. People hear it and or they embellish it, and then people think, "Well, you said that." You know, the one I get a lot, sadly, and this is kind of a sad note. I've mentioned this from the pulpit before, but a lot of times gals years later will say, "Well, I told you I was being abused, and you didn't do anything about it." And I'm like, wow, you know, when exactly did you tell us that you were being? And I'm not so really that interested in proving that she didn't. I mean, because they're already in trouble, you know. It's not. But in my mind, I'm thinking, when did you tell me that? You know, and the truth is, women they give you signals, you know, and stuff, or they say things. You know, and so now I pretty regularly just ask women if they're being abused. You know, are you being physically abused by your husband if they come in? You know, because you'd be surprised how many of them are, or, you know, and so, but that's a very typical thing that happens. You know, or they hear you talk about submission, and they translate that as, well, you know, Gene said that the Bible says I have to stay married to this guy who's beating me up and stuff. And so a lot of times I'll preface those talks now with, you know, a footnote that says I'm not talking about physical abuse. But so it's very interesting. It's nice to be able to say I would never have said that, because you always say the same thing about something. You know, not that you're always right. I'm not saying I'm always right, but it's nice to know this is what I always say when people say this. And so I can't imagine that I would have said anything different than that. Now, though dialogos isn't broad enough to mean control of the tongue, I think it should be obvious that tongue control is a quality every maturing man needs to aspire to. In his famous passage, James wrote, James 3, "Brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look at the ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so the tongue is a little member. It boasts great things, but see how great a forest a fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body, sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell." You got to love James. "For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no one can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. He goes on. Of course, we understand that the real problem is the heart. Your tongue only gives expression to what is in your heart. James's illustrations indicate you need someone else to be in control of your heart and therefore your tongue. Just as a horse needs a rider holding the reins and a ship needs a captain manning the rudder, your tongue needs a master. In our own energy, we can't really change our own hearts and therefore tame our tongues. God's the only one who can control your tongue by changing your heart. So here's a quotable quote from John Corson along these lines. He says, "The more time we spend using our tongues for praying, the less time we'll spend praying, P-R-E-Y, on others with our tongues." You gotta love John coming up with those things. And so that sort of brings us full circle. A mature Christian man doesn't gossip or slander. He says the same thing to everyone with discretion. God has control of his heart, and you can see that because he has a controlled tongue. And so I would adopt our saying to read, "Christian man not steeped with forked tongue."